With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Live from an auction house in Paris, we present A Wheezing Groaning Sound, undoubtedly the only Doctor Who podcast to be done by three men, all outbidding each other for the painting of the fallen Madonna with the big boobies by Van Clump. I am Paul Seven Fakes Litchfield, and joining me like the Eleanor Bron to my John Cleese are Mr. John Rayne and Mr. Tom Neenan. Hello! So, find out if a Roman centurion is real by asking him Roman yes or Romana. Christ, Romana. Reveal a henchman's penchant for being a latent transvestite by going Herman. And and create an alien species in the style of The Fly by asking the lead singer of the Rolling Stones to climb into a pod with Dave Lee Roth, Mick Jagger, Dave Lee Roth, Jagger Roth, as we gleefully montage shot away around Gay Paris in the City of Death.
Yay.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Well, yes, please. Anyone say something, because I'm just going to go. I'm giving it 100 Duggan punches. That's the end of the show. Goodbye.
I was going to say the journey to that Jaggeroth punchline was almost as long as the journey the production team made to their fancy location.
And it's like an Aesop's fable, but with no moral at the end. So, guys, it is Saturday, 29th of September, 1979. And you get Episode 1 of The City of Death. Wow. Now, if you were watching the BBC on that particular day, at 9:05, it began with Horseback.
Oh, yeah. Oh, hello.
Yeah, Stuart Hastie. Wow, what a name. Mm. Stuart Hastie takes us through the wonderful physique of the horse.
Oh, God. Yeah, well, he'd like to shrink himself down.
Fantastic voyage style.
There's two ways we can enter this horse. Which one do you think I'm going to take? Oh, no, oh, no.
Or is that just a very nice way of saying in court what he did?
I don't know. I came across the field.
The man was making himself familiar with the biology of a horse.
Is it a man literally in a paddock going, cool?
Yeah, wow. I think so, yeah.
Thank you, goodbye. Yeah. There you go. 9:50, you had The Pope in Ireland, live!
Oh, wow.
Yes. With your host, RTE1's Fragnellus Andrew. Fragnellus.
Imagine looking at a baby and going, Fragnellus is what I'm going to call that child.
John, Joan, fuck it, Fragnellus.
Yeah.
It's amazing, isn't it? Send the cares away.
Another day.
Down at Fragnellus' house.
Down at Fragnellus' house. Boom. That's how it ends. And then 12:30 to 5:05, grandstand.
Yay.
Then the news, and then followed by 6:05, Doctor Who, City of Death, Part 1.
Yay.
And it has a bit of a blurb. It says, the Doctor and Romana visit Paris, but what starts out as a holiday turns into something much more sinister.
Oh, it does.
It really does.
Absolutely bang on. Bang on the nose there. Mm-hmm. There wasn't much else on until 9:10, Starsky and Hutch.
Hey.
Yes. And it says this, Hutch becomes a hitman and wipes out Starsky. Or does he? I hope not.
No, yeah. No,
they got that wrong. It's that they clean out...
What?
They clean out Starsky's rabbit hutch. They got that wrong.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Right. And on BBC Two at 7:40 a.m. until 2:30 p.m. Good God, was Open University.
Oh, my God.
Wow. Courses include brake testing, guerrilla warfare in Algeria.
What?
River course measurement and nude modelling.
Oh. Oh,
I'm just going to watch the Open University, Doris. Don't come in the room. Oh, are you doing your river course management course again? Yeah, that's right, yeah. Cool, look welcome. At the Oxbow Lake on that.
Please welcome to the Open University nude modelling course. Our model for today, Jeremy.
Oh, no! Yeah! All right, Doris, I'll walk the dog. So, yeah, so you had, like, literally hours of Open University. And then at 20 past two, you had Saturday cinema. And the film was called Out of the Clouds.
Oh.
Yes. A tender love story set in a busy London airport.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh.
An American engineer and a Central European girl fall in love thanks to the fog.
Is that a sequel to The Fog?
Yeah.
And that's a really lovely film at the end. Thanks, Fog. Goodbye.
You're welcome.
Fog's waving. You're welcome, Billow Billow.
That was his name.
Billow Billow.
Yeah. Billow Billow. At 4:22, it's back. It's the Pope in Ireland. Highlights from the visit from Ulster with Fragnella. And then at 6 p.m. was Grapevine. I don't know what that is, but it says this: 500,000 children are left alone after school. Ian Breach and Anne Hunter find out why.
I thought Grapevine was Jeremy and Tim's older brother.
Like a sort of older, seasoned Oz Clark.
Permanently
pissed. This is a lovely claret.
And when Grapevine gets older, does it have to become Raisin Vine?
Yes. And Jeremy can get really hysterical about everything he does.
Yeah.
I see Raisin is having cornflakes this morning. What do you think?
Great. You're doing great today. I mean, there's a theme through these three, which is sort of reactionary talk radio hosts.
I think we've all had enough of them, haven't we?
Yeah.
Now, call in, tell us.
Or don't.
Or at least Tim is making the family seem okay because he's doing his Columbo reenactments, which I'm enjoying.
Oh, true. Yeah, they're absolutely brilliant.
Mm. Really good.
At 8 p.m., you had Opera on 2, La Gioconda in 4 acts with Pavarotti. Mm. There you go. And they had a break from that at 10 to 10 with something called 6 Days in September. And it says John Hayland, male, as in M-A-Y-L-E.
So oh,
it could
right,
be
okay.
Could be Malley. Mm-hmm. John Hayland Malley, the UK's finest abstract painter, loved to excess by some, whilst others ate his guts.
Ooh.
52 to 48.
And then it's back at 10:30 to Opera on 2, Act 3 of La Gioconda with Pavarotti.
Oh.
And then that finally finished at, again, I hate the fact that at 10 to 12, it's Midnight Movie. They never get it right. It's always a long time.
Yeah.
And the film is called Nowhere to Go.
Ooh.
And it says con man Paul Gregory is willing to serve prison time for the theft of rare coins. He is sentenced to 10 years. Twice as long as he was expecting.
Oh, oh no.
God, what a twist.
What a twist.
What a twist.
But that was your television delights on BBC One and BBC Two.
Oh.
Well, we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about the only thing you should have been watching on that day. And that was, Dr. Bloody Great Who and the City of Bloody Lovely Death.
Oh.
Which a lot of people were watching because ITV wasn't on, or was it maybe one of these episodes? Certainly ITV stopped operating. So I think City of Death for one episode got, I might be exaggerating, infinity viewers, I think it was.
I think this was a strike, wasn't it?
Yes.
It got by episode 4, it got 16 million viewers, which is the most.
And you didn't even have to fall through a bar.
Yeah.
Well, Tom did.
But
it wasn't filmed.
No.
It was on screen. And also, it's the very first Doctor Who to be filmed on an outside location. It's the first time they went somewhere different. So they first time ever.
As in like an international location.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. That's fantastic. So we open on part one. Oh, God, here we go. It opens just on possibly the finest bit of model work there's ever been on Doctor Who.
Yep.
It just looks fucking stunning. This, the ship looks brilliant, like this sort of ball cock with metal claws. It looks like one of the drones in Empire Strikes Back on the planet Hoth. It's amazing. And it's going to take off, and you see this mad looking fucking alien, this one-eyed green thing. You don't know who or what it is, but he's pleading for help. He's trying to launch his ship, and suddenly there's an explosion, and you're like, what the fuck, what the fuck, what's going on? And we immediately cut to the Doctor and Romana in Paris on top of the Eiffel Tower.
They're
in Paris. Yeah.
Okay.
They're having so much fun.
Make it subtle. Yeah.
Yeah, so much fun. They're literally on the very top of the Eiffel Tower. tiny bit of the top.
Yeah.
You can tell obviously Douglas Adams' involvement in all of this because the script is crackling with energy, gags, fun.
Oh, yeah.
It is just relentlessly brilliant.
Yeah,
it is absolutely brilliant. The first thing the Doctor does is he compares the idea of Paris to a fine wine, but then he says, but we're here in 1979, so it's a bit of a table wine, really.
So
brilliant.
It does make me laugh, though, that of all the time periods the Doctor wanted to take Romana to see Paris, he went to 1979.
The Doctor's looking absolutely resplendent in his get-up. Yeah. Romana is in her school outfit and her boater. It's a bit dodgy, but there you go.
Let's not focus too much on that.
And I love the fact that the Doctor, because he's in Paris, he's got this lovely little pin badge, which is like a little painted easel thing. It's just all the little lovely touches are there.
I mean, this is like prime Tom, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, I know he's 2 years later, he'd be gone, but at this point, he's just he's like a titan.
Every third line he's given is a brilliant joke.
Yeah.
Everything he says there's no naff lines in this.
No.
Everyone is absolutely amazing in this. And I love the fact that the first third of it is the Doctor and Romana just having a really lovely time.
Yes.
They're just wandering around.
And it's
they're hopping and skipping. They're taking the train. He's going to take her for lunch and give her some bouillabaisse.
There's a great bit. I don't know if when they're sort of outside and because they frame it all really well. And I think you've got the cathedral in the background. And then they're chatting and there's a really lovely frame shot. And there's a woman whose car's broken down behind them.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. She's like pushing this tiny yellow Ford Fiesta or something. And it's just...
You can just hear her.
Yeah. Lovely little detail.
So you get this lovely,
of course. I know
you
get this, is
yes, of course. You get this lovely sort of 8-minute sequence of just the Doctor and Romana just on a jolly, just having so much fun.
And it's
really lovely because the first thing you've seen is just this hideous green monster and then an explosion. You're like, and then we cut to the main villain of the piece, Count Scarlione.
God, is he good?
And isn't he fucking great?
Oh,
so good.
What to get? How did they get him? How did they get Glover? How did they get Julian Glover?
I think he was fairly jobbing at this point.
Do you think? Because he
he's in Empire Strikes Back for like 2 minutes. The following year. So
yeah,
but
he's proper acting kudos. He just acts everyone off the screen.
He's electric.
He's absolutely brilliant, isn't he? And he's with this little sort of Professor Luigi Brava. I don't know where he's from.
It reminds me of Von Shorthausen from Hello, Hello. But
And they're arguing about funding. They're arguing about funding, and they talk about priceless paintings and things like that. And you're still you have no idea at this point what's going on, but you're so intrigued. And then there's a henchman called Herman who appears, and Scarlione says that they need to sell more paintings. You're like, okay, yeah, fine. I don't know what's going on there. It all looks perfectly normal. And then we cut back to a cafe, and the Doctor reads a book in 2 seconds. Just skims it and goes, oh yeah, it's not bad. Absolutely brilliant.
But I love about the still life painter as well, though.
These gags that peppered all the way through that are just so brilliant. And the Doctor reveals to Romana that she's being sketched by a local artist.
Yeah, and don't move.
Don't move. And she turns around and he goes off in a typical French huff. Like, oh, mon Dieu!
And Tom just pulls this amazing, phase.
Yes. Dearie me.
Made me laugh so much.
Is it just random that he's sketching her with a clock face? Why that artist is doing that, or whether he sort of sees into her soul and is able to kind of see that she's a time lady.
I've no idea. They just leave that there.
Hang it. Yeah. You don't mind it, do you? It's funny. It's a good scene.
Yeah. Because he screws up the picture and goes out, and then he looks at it and goes, oh, that's kind of good. And then suddenly the Doctor notices a sort of glitch in time, I suppose. A glitch in time, which the Doctor, as we know, notices this sort of thing almost every episode.
Yeah.
There's been a strange glitch in time, or as he calls it, a distortion in time.
Doesn't the glitch make them repeat the scene again?
Yes,
which
slightly,
he's done with Romana before, isn't he?
Yeah, wasn't that in Canine? Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's been a distortion in time, or as I wrote in my notes, he's probably just sobered up. So there's a time fracture. Yeah.
Yeah. And the picture of Romana. In time.
Yes, that's right. And then we cut back to the basement of Le Ghastly Grange, and experiments are afoot.
Yes,
and Count Scaglione demands more tests, more tests! And then it cuts back to the Doctor, who detects another time crack. But they're still on holiday, so basically he goes, fuck it. And all this sort of running around, the incidental music is brilliant.
Yeah.
It's all do-da-da, do-do-boo, boop-ba-boop-ba-boop-ba-boop. It's really good. It's really good fun. And the Doctor decides that he's going to treat Romana. I presume they've had their bullyabass. And they're going to go and they're going to see the Mona Lisa. And I like the fact that Romana's like, I've seen better art galleries.
Isn't it so
he's like, this is the best of the best.
Yeah. For Doctor Who to be on location in a foreign country and to actually, you see the Eiffel Tower, they go to the Louvre, it's part of the plot, it's part of that. As opposed to they'll go to Amsterdam and Spain and Seville and they could be anywhere and it's pointless them being there. Whereas this is it's in the very DNA of the story.
Yeah, may as well have berries on and strings of onions. They're definitely in Paris. But I kind of love that. You can really tell in the first episode that they're celebrating. Look where we are. This is amazing. Yeah. Get every shot you can get because we're using this. And then they go into the Louvre and there's a sort of guided tour going on. There's this weird sort of confusing scene where the Doctor sort of falls into someone.
Yeah.
That old lady. It's so funny.
Yeah. The old lady. Do you mind moving on, please? And then the Doctor's already noticed something that we haven't, that some of the people stood around have got guns, because he falls into them and goes, oh, I'm sorry, I dented my head on your gun.
Yes.
That's not a gun.
Yeah, and then suddenly we get very sexy saxophone music. because the Count has a lady friend. Who has no name, she's just a Countess.
Yes.
She's just the Countess. And we cut back to Le Ghastly Grange, and Scaglione is once again, he wants a speedier time span. He's so demanding.
No, he wants a Steel Eye Span record.
More Steely Span. And then it cuts to the Doctor and Romana leaving the Louvre, but they're now being followed by a rather strange trench-coated fella.
Hello, yeah.
Yes. And this is possibly the best character to ever meet in a Doctor Who story.
Yep.
Why didn't Duggan become a companion?
I don't know.
Why didn't he become a companion?
Was he ever in it again?
Never again.
Why?
Yeah, one and done.
And he's so brilliantly well written.
Yeah.
He's a sort of private eye, and all he does is he punches his way through anything.
He thumps anything.
And it's comically done, it's beautifully done, and in fact, later on, he does the most important thump in human history, which is absolutely brilliant. So you've got Duggan following them around, which is absolutely brilliant. More montage travel-y shots, and then the Doctor realises that they're actually being followed.
Also, he stole a bracelet.
Oh,
yes,
that's right.
What happened when he sort of accidentally fell into people. He managed to do a quick sort of delicate sort of pickpocketing thing, didn't he?
Yes, yeah.
And he stole a bracelet from Lady Saxophone Countess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Trenchcoat Duggan has been following them because he's witnessed this. And then he suddenly confronts them by gunpoint in a cafe, reveals that his name is Duggan, which is brilliant. Mm. And then the Doctor's like, oh no, the game's up, and says to the waiter, Waters, make them doubles.
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
Tempering the tension with amazing humour. And then you suddenly get Lady Sax Attack, who's gone back to report to Scaglione and says, oh, I've been robbed. And Scarlione is absolutely furious about this. Mm-hmm. Cut back to the cafe. Duggan demands the bracelet is given to him. And he's got a gun, so he demands to have it by gunpoint. And then it cuts right back to Scarlione. And I'm just going, what's his angle? I don't know why I'm saying what's his angle.
What is his angle?
But at that point, you have no real idea what on earth is going on.
No, but you sort of have. It's given you enough clues that they know where it's going.
Yes.
You're still like. Because you just sort of feel like it's a steady hand on the tiller of this story.
There's a lovely dropping of breadcrumbs throughout all this that you want to follow. You're like, why is that happening? What is going on? It's absolutely brilliant. Mm. And then and then suddenly two henchmen come and they grab the bracelet and return it back to the count, don't they?
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah.
Yes. And this is brilliant because Scarlione at this point is very sort of aloof and very sort of, blah, 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 blah. Mm. And then as soon as he gets the bracelet back, he says to Herman, oh, wonderful, kill those two henchmen that did that for me, would you?
Yeah.
Just so casually, cold and indifferent. Brilliant. So they go off to kill the thugs. Yeah. And then Scarlione demands that actually he'd like to meet the thieves that so carefully removed the bracelet because obviously the plot needs to continue.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
And Duggan is now with the Doctor and Romana and reveals that he's a private dick from the UK. Which is brilliant. So the thugs return again, grab the Doctor, and they bring the Doctor to Chateau Le Ghastly Grange. Meanwhile, Scarlione goes into another room, and you get the best cliffhanger ever.
It's the best thing ever.
And it's so strange because you've already seen it right at the beginning of the episode, but that doesn't matter because he takes his own face off, and there is the green bogey-eyed monster of doom.
So there we
go. It's so brilliant.
Documentary when I was a kid called 30 Years in the TARDIS, or more than 30 Years in the TARDIS, and that was one of the clips they had from it. And when I was younger, I had to leave the room whenever I knew that bit was happening, because it scared me so much that this horrible thing with its one eye, and that it turns and it faces you. It's like it sees you, and it's just it's so extraordinary that I remember
watching it as it went out. I remember as a 6-year-old seeing that and shitting myself. Terrified.
I have to ask how he can see with the mask on.
Maybe he's like a monoid. Maybe he pops it in his mouth.
That makes sense.
Something like that.
My sort of headcanon for this is like, you know how in later Doctor Who they have a thing where they sort of have like a with the TARDIS where they sort of do something to your brain where you don't quite notice stuff and you sort of forgive it. I can't remember what they call it, but it's sort of a reality distorter or something. I kind of hope he's got one of those in his pocket that kind of makes him look more human than he clearly can be with a rubber mask and everything else. Because there is that point a bit later, I don't want to step on it, where sort of the Doctor goes, you two are like an item, and you haven't noticed that he's just wearing a rubber mask and he's secretly like, an alien.
Imagine what his knob looks like.
It looks exactly like a monoid.
Oh, God.
Well, if you'd like to imagine what the Doctor's knob looks like, send your pictures to the gallery.
Oh, God, I've just realized
you cannot return them.
It's Alpha Centauri, isn't it?
It is Alpha Centauri.
Hi there, I'm Yasmin Akram. Join myself and my friend Philippa Dunn each week for our podcast, We Heart Worry, a show about cars and their engines. Obviously not. It's a show where we talk about our fears, our worries, and our anxieties in a bid to help you with yours. And we just have a laugh as well. So join us. There's nothing to be scared of. I promise.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So we get into episode. We get into episode two. The Doctor is now taken to Le Ghastly Grange. Makes an immediately hilarious comedy entrance.
Oh my god! This whole scene
is beautiful, is crackling with energy. The Doctor is playfully poking and prodding at people, even though he knows he's in danger. He's so on top of his game. He's fine with all of this. He's just having fun.
It's the scene where that gif comes from of Tom Baker doing the cheeky wave. And he's got that energy all the way through it.
One of my favourite lines in Doctor Who ever, which is when he's pushed into the room and he says, "What a wonderful butler, he's so violent."
He's so violent. And then he goes up to the Countess and goes, "Well, you're a beautiful woman, probably." He's just having so much fun. And what's lovely about this, Romana is also part of the joy with
this.
She's just as equal to the Doctor. She's just as clever, funny and intelligent. She's also going, "This is just a fun game. We are so much cleverer than you people, but you don't know that." We're caught up in this escapade, and that I think that's the thing. In this one, the Doctor for three episodes is just having an escapade. He's just having fun. It then gets deadly serious, but until that point, he's just having. It's just like, oh, brilliant! We went on a holiday, and we can just have a right old laugh. It's the energy of it is so much. It's so much fun. It's so rare in a Doctor Who. It's so rare in a Doctor Who for the main protagonist to be having fun and not constantly being Peter Davison going, "The world's going to end all the time," you know.
But he's got they've got the same energy in this as when you get a phone scammer call and you immediately know they're a scammer. So you play along with them.
Yeah.
Just so you can piss them off at the end. This is that episode, this story.
Yes, you're absolutely right. Yes, the rubbing hands together in glee. And then you find out that what's been going on painting-wise is that Scaglione wants to steal another Mona Lisa. Another Mona Lisa? What do you mean another Mona Lisa? There's only one Mona Lisa, isn't there? Good Lord. But there you go. And then during all this, Duggan decides, well, I'm fed up of being taken hostage. So he picks up a chair and decides he's going to smash the joint like the end of a Who concert. And then the Scullion, he goes, actually, no, you're all getting a bit out of hand now. So I'm going to lock you all up if you don't mind. He's extremely polite about it. And then they find out that the Count and the Countess are going to steal the Mona Lisa. So the Doctor is now locked up, and beautiful work with his sonic screwdriver trying to open it.
That bit is so funny when Duggan Kazotsky says, "What are you doing?" And he says, "I'm using this." And then Duggan's like, "Well," and he looks at him and goes, "It's not working." And then Duggan grabs it off him, smacks it twice on the wall. And then he takes it back off of him. And then he presses it and it starts working. And he says, "Ooh, would you like to be my science officer?"
It's so brilliant, isn't it? Every time Duggan solves something with mindless violence, it works.
And the Doctor seems like, "Ooh."
I would say about this as well.
I could do with someone like you.
The comedy in this is great. And, you know, we all sort of are, you know, we all work in comedy. And, like, often the comedy in Doctor Who isn't my favourite bit of it. I find it maybe a bit too broad or something, Whereas in this, like, the lines are like actually funny in a sort of timeless way, and I think that's so impressive because you see sort of attempts or you know you see things with other like comedic episodes and they can be quite like dire, whereas this they're like the lines that are meant to be funny are really funny, and I think that's such a good achievement for it.
This is the thing, you've got an alien, you've got all this mystery, you've got threat, and then all the way through it, not only is it going at a pace that is just, nothing is wasted in this, and it's just got six gags in every scene, like genuinely brilliantly funny gags, and it just makes Tom Baker, for me, just go, "You're the finest Doctor Who there ever was, why do I even think anyone else could ever be better than you?" He just does that sometimes, doesn't he, where you go, it's Tom Baker, he's Doctor Who, you cannot take it away from him, no matter how brilliant others have been, no matter what their tropes are and their looks and their sort of feel. Sometimes Tom Baker will just go, "No, it's me." You are so bloody right. And you get this amazing thing when they're locked up, where again Duggan smashy smashy Hulk smash. It's revealed that behind a wall there are now six other Mona Lisas. And at that point you're going, "Oh, so they're forged? Is that what's going on?" And it's not even that. It's not even that simple. It's even fucking better. It's even better. And we still haven't got there yet. That's what I love about this. Is the you think you're going in this direction? Well, what about this, and it's like a curtain reveal, and you go, fuck, you're going somewhere else now in the plot. I'm sorry, folks, this is not going to be our normal sort of wheezing groaning where we go, oh god, yeah, then this is basically a loving. This is a loving, I'm afraid, because it's
the reason
good.
That we kind of, you know, that the fact that it can hit these highs, and like I think also that Lala Ward and Tom Baker, like, they just have this effortless chemistry, obviously, that, you know, would then lead to a marriage. I'm not sure if they are married at this time. I don't think they are. But like, they have this easy chemistry, and she's brilliant, and she's in, you know, she has real agency, which is great. And you sort of think, oh, it can hit these heights. And then, you know, sort of not long after, there's some, you know, you've got like Warrior's Gate, which I'm sorry, it's not one of my favourites, but like, you sort of wonder, oh, you it was going so well. Mm. It's so brilliant. It can be this good.
Well, this is the thing about the dynamic. You've got the Doctor, who's the Doctor, and then you've got a private eye who's good with his fists, but with the dynamic we've got here, he's basically the most stupid third in command one.
Yeah.
10 years before this, the good with his fists private eye would, the female assistant would be cowering before the majesty of such a man. But in this, he's dismissed as an idiot.
It's
such a comedy foil, isn't it? Because the Doctor's going, must you solve everything with your fists? And he's like, yes. Yeah. And every time he does, it works.
I mean, he even says at one point, I just want to thump people.
Duggan should have been a companion. He would have been amazing. Yeah. As soon as he lands on an alien planet, you will immediately, the first thing that happens is the TARDIS opens and then a fist comes out.
He'd have beat the shit out of Davros.
Oh my god.
The first thing he would have done is
the Doctor would have stood behind him holding his arms. The Doctor would have just been laid into his face.
The Doctor's wondering whether to put the two strands together. Meanwhile, Duggan has killed every Dalek.
But they work so well together as a trio. I don't understand why.
Yeah, it
he
would have been lovely.
In.
Yes, because you would have had the elderly eccentric Time Lord with his equally intelligent friend, and then this idiot that comes along with them.
Well, this embodiment of humanity.
Yes. But again,
just
he's
sort
not
of blunt instrument.
In many Doctor Who's, whenever the human, the person through our eyes, is confronted with the enormity of what's going on, aliens, time, etc., they normally collapse into a heap of their own, like, oh my god. But Duggan's just, I'll just punch it. I'll punch anything that scares me or gets in my way.
It's like if Harry was useful.
He's like a big Allen key, isn't he, for plot?
Yeah.
Anyway, so the Doctor and Duggan are in the thing, but then there's an amazing bit where they look through the they look into the other room, which is the lab, and they see this amazing experiment of a chicken turning into an egg and vice versa. It's the great egg race. It's absolutely brilliant.
And on skeleton.
And the effect is really good. It's really scary, even though it looks a bit daft. I think it's because it's done in sort of almost silence, and it's really like, what's happening?
It's not that Julian Glover has a habit of sort of a premature aging, doesn't he? Because in the Last Crusade as well, he drinks from the wrong grail and it all goes wrong. Yes. So clearly it follows him around.
And he turns into a chicken.
Yeah. You chose unwisely.
But I can eat him for my dinner, so thank you. I haven't eaten for 500 years.
So you get this experiment that happens, and you're still like, okay, what's this got to do with anything? What's going on? It's just so mad. And then Scarlone appears and goes, oh, you've escaped, have you, troublesome fools? Again, not too alarmed, not too annoyed. He pulls out a gun.
Don't we have the Doctor talking to the scientist as well?
Yes. There's a little chat about that.
When he turns his back, Duggan knocks him out.
Yeah.
I was about to say, first thing Duggan does is lamp him.
It's so funny. Tom's literally turned his back and then turns back and he's on the floor.
And Duggan's always so pleased with himself as well, like he's done something well.
Yeah.
I know. And then the Doctor goes, I've got a feeling about something that might be going on. I need to go off and do this by myself. So Romana, you take care of Duggan, and I'll meet you in a bit. And you think, oh, he's probably just going to wander off into another bit of La Ghastly Grange, but he does something truly fucking amazing. Meanwhile, Duggan meets the Countess and lamps her unconscious with a mingle.
Yeah,
he's just everyone he's met, he's it's so good. And the Doctor gets back into the bloody TARDIS and goes all the way back to meet Leonardo bloody da Vinci.
And it made
and it's amazing.
It made me laugh because it reminded me of the Partridge episode where they go to Bono's house. Because the Doctor walks in and he's going, Leonardo, Leonardo. No, he's not here. Let's go.
But that scene is so brilliant. The Doctor has a hunch, pops in the TARDIS, I'll be back in a jiffy, goes all the way bloody back to 1505 to Florence. And he's going, Leonardo, as if they're old mates. Mm-hmm. And then you get this amazing comedy sequence with a guard and the doctor. It's absolutely beautiful. The doctor's like, oh, you're a nasty brute, aren't you? And
it's but so the rare that you'll
casual chit-chat.
They get, like, there's actual time stuff going on in this. Now, people
That's why this story is so brilliant, because you've got so much going on. And it all then... What's lovely is you're going, huh? Huh? And you go in, it's all brilliant. It's all because the doctor goes back to meet the original man who painted it, and he's expecting to see Leonardo da Vinci. And how's this for a fucking cliffhanger? In walks the Count. And you're like, what the hell?
What's happening?
What? Fucking brilliant. That's what you call a cliffhanger. Yeah. Oh my god.
It's a great set as well. The Leonardo set is all just looks very brilliant. Rich, isn't it? That's really good.
Well, this is the benefit of the BBC having all these costume period sets knocking about. They can just knock out and say, here's Leonardo's workshop.
It's quite a small set, but they dress it really well.
It looks perfect, doesn't it? It looks absolutely perfect. So you get this, what the F? That Scaglione is there. And then we cut to part three. Doug and Romana are now breaking into the Louvre because they want to either stop the Mona Lisa from being painted. So stop the Mona Lisa from being stolen. Yeah. But as they go in, they realise the alarms are off and the guards are unconscious. Duggan's furious because he hasn't punched out the guards. The Mona Lisa has gone and Duggan sets off an alarm. and then jumps through a window.
That's so funny. She's like, well, how are we going to get out of here now? And he goes, I've got an idea. And he just races off and jumps through a window. And
I've got an idea. They could walk back through the door they came in, but no, I'm going to jump through a window.
And it's classic Doctor Who because it's really funny. It's a sound effect, isn't it? He just runs out of shot and then it's a sound effect. And you're like, but that sells it. That's really nice
Well, it does because then Romana's like, ugh. This is a human. This is what humans do.
And then, so after that, we cut back to Legacy Grange, and Professor he finds all these Mona Lisas, and he's like, "What the hell's going on?" And then he finds his boss, I suppose, Count Scarlatti, unconscious.
Duggan punched him.
He did. As is his wont.
Duggan's punched him. And then we cut back to Florence, and then you get this beautiful scene between Glover and Baker, where he's going, "Well, actually, I'm the last of the Jaggeroth," and Tom's like, "Oh, all right, if you like." And he reveals this amazing thing. I'm the same person existing in different times. I was splintered during something that happened. Still don't really know. I suppose you'd know now from the beginning of episode one, but it's still not perfectly clear. And there are seven versions of the same person existing in different times. That is fucking stunning.
You sort of buy it, don't you? I can't quite picture it, but you're like, oh, I get. Yeah, that makes sense.
The idea that the Count is forcing Leonardo da Vinci to make copies of the Mona Lisa, which he then seals in a vault, and then his future self can then take them out. That's just brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. So we all know that the Count needs funding, he needs money, so what best way to do that than to keep selling Mona Lisas, knowing that nobody's ever going to actually say anything because they don't want to be embarrassed by having the fake. So he's come up with this foolproof heist. It's like a heist film now.
It's
turned into a heist film, and it's absolutely brilliant. But the Doctor does something absolutely brilliant, and you're not quite sure what it is. He just gets a marker pen out and does some daubings, but you can't really see what they are. And it pays off so beautifully later on.
Well, he writes, this is a fake.
Yeah, it pays off so beautifully later on when he goes, don't worry, when they all get x-rayed, they'll say, these are all fakes that he wrote. It's just...
Which is also so ironic, because they're not, but like...
No, they're not. I know, it's bizarre. He's like defacing art. It's just it's just absolutely brilliant.
Hey, so I haven't told you, have I? I'm Banksy.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. So now we get the idea that the Count is the last of the Jaggeroth, and they destroyed themselves 400 million years ago. So you're like, and the splintered versions of himself scattered through time. And the Count then seals up the original for the future version of himself to find, which is a genius plot. And what's going on here? And the guard reveals that he's not really anything to do with this. He's merely working for the Borgias. Which again is just another brilliant thing to just throw in for fun.
Also, the Count puts a DeLorean in a mineshaft and leaves a map.
It's all getting very like that. Brilliant. It's amazing. And then the doctor takes a who takes a Polaroid of him? Does the doctor take a Polaroid?
The doctor does.
Doctor takes a photo.
And the guy's like, oh, all right.
And then
surely he'd be like, brilliant. Oh, witchcraft.
Yeah.
Oh my god! And then and then suddenly the doctor punches the guard by actually not touching him, which is amazing.
Yeah, it's very impressive. That. Stops just before, doesn't he? Yeah.
Stops just before, and then gets into his TARDIS and disappears. And you're like, that's brilliant.
Clever.
And then Scaliani is now our Scaliani, as in Paris Scaliani, 1979, wakes up and gives the professor
in his kimono.
In his kimono.
Very trendy. Yeah. Very
Perhaps you'd like to see what I'm wearing under this kimono.
It's the Hanging Gardens of Babylon.
Why are you sticking a courgette out of that? And Scaliani decides, actually, the professor's pretty much, he doesn't really need him now. His plan's going so well. And Scaliani is one of those James Bond villains that likes to sort of tell you what he's up to. So he just sort of gives the professor a bollocking and says, you're useless, you're rubbish, I fucking hate you. Which is just hilarious. Which is really, really, really funny. And he reveals his intentions. I am the Jaggeroth.
Mm,
which is fantastic. Mm. Meanwhile, cut back to a bistro late at night.
Yep.
A window smashes. It's Duggan. Duggan smashes into the bistro, sits in. Romana sits down. Duggan finds a bottle. Oh, they'll have a drink. Can't be arsed with a corkscrew. Yep. Smashes the bottle.
Yeah, she says, do you ever open it? Do you ever open anything in a normal way? And he just smashes the bottle. No.
Yeah.
It's so funny.
This
it's
has
just
also got
so
one of those
funny.
Lines that's so good. It's a bit overwritten, but then you see how good Lala Ward is that she just throws this line off, which is about sort of, he says he can't make an omelette without breaking eggs. And she's like, if you were making an omelette, I'd expect to find an oven on fire. What is it? Pile of broken crockery, an oven on fire, and an unconscious chef.
Mm.
And it's a really good, she just like tosses it off like it's nothing. And it's like, that is both great writing and also great performance there. It's so impressive.
It's so lovely. And there's no real reason for that scene at all, apart from the fact that it's just brilliantly funny, and it just is a nice counterweight to the next thing that happens. It goes right back to the Grange, Legacy Grange, and Scaliani is now saying that he's got plans for this machine, and the professor must build it to his exact purposes. And the professor at this stage is like, but I wanted to feed the world. I wanted to make chicken OXO cubes for the whole world. Oh, no. I'm making a weapon of a mass destruction. What a terrible mistake to make. He's all like, what have I done? Oh, God, what have I done?
No.
Which is absolutely brilliant. Meanwhile, Herman brings in the seventh Mona Lisa. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
Millions can be raised to fund this mysterious project. We still don't know what the project is, though, which is still cool. Mm. We're in episode 3 and we still don't quite know what's going on, but it's all just so much fun.
Yeah.
And then, so yes, it's Paris 1979. Scaliani reveals, this is great, that the Jaggeroth themselves, well, he himself, has actually influenced and shaped mankind's evolution in his many guises. That's amazing.
Yeah. Mm.
So not only is he's got a nefarious plot, but also he's helped mankind along the way to make sure that that plot comes to fruition, which is absolutely brilliant.
The long game.
Yeah,
the long game.
it's absolutely brilliant.
Is it the silence? They sort of play a similar thing with that in You Who as well, where
the silence
are doing a similar thing. But yeah, I think it all comes from, a lot of it comes from this, doesn't it?
But now we get the first crink maybe in Scaglione's plan, because because he's been causing, with all these experiments with the professor, he's been causing these weird sort of schisms, these little sort of cracks in time. It's also the fact that there shouldn't technically really in the whole sort of timeline of the universe be seven versions of himself, and it's that very act that's causing this.
Yes,
and so you get this lovely shot of Scaliani in Paris and the Scaliani in Florence in 1505, both having a sort of wobble, like sort of losing control, which is fantastic.
And Glover plays it, it's just on the right side of obviously playing the kind of, it's a sort of funny moment and it's silly, but he plays it real, and it's a really good Doctor Who performance, which is like, it's quite big, but also it's very grounded.
Yeah.
I think he really does that tone really nicely. Mm.
There is not one duff performance in this whole thing, and weirdly, there's only a cast of about six people for this whole story, really, and they're all brilliant. None of them, even the silly guard in Florence, he's just brilliant. By not saying much and going, He's just always funny. So the Doctor is now back in 1979. He goes to the Louvre because he thinks, I need to stop the painting being stolen, but it's already been stolen. He goes there, realises it's been stolen, goes to the bistro to find Romana and Duggan, finds a note that Romana left saying, we're back at the chateau. He's like, oh, Christ.
Because he says, the last place they should go is to the chateau.
Yes.
Yeah.
He gets the note. We have gone to the chateau. And he's like,
again, absolutely brilliant. It's just very funny. The last thing they would do is drink that poison. And there's a message. We've just drank poison! Whee! So the doctor then races to the chateau and finds Duggan and Romana at gunpoint.
Yeah.
Oh, Scagliani's got them at gunpoint. And the Count forces Romana this time, because he's thinking, I don't need this professor anymore. Mm-hmm. I'll use you. I've realised that you two aren't what you seem to be.
Mm. Yeah.
And I'm going to use you to build that machine. And what I love is that Romana goes... Yeah, all right. She doesn't do that, but what you're doing could do, she does, yeah, lovely. No, I'm really clever. I'll probably be able to do that for you.
Have we gone past the scene where the Countess reveals she's got the handwritten book of Hamlet from Shakespeare?
When he talks about the mixed metaphor, when he's like, I always said that was a mixed metaphor.
Yeah,
yes.
To be or not to be. No, yeah. Yeah, and then he says it's in his handwriting because Shakespeare had a bad arm.
Yeah.
That's right.
I mean, that I like those sort of references to the past and all this kind of like, I was there, yes. I remember, I got the last ticket or whatever. Yeah, all that stuff's really fun.
But in this one, not only, because quite often the Doctor will mention it like, oh yeah, I met Queen Victoria, lovely woman, blah, blah. Mm. But this time he actually goes and meets them and it's so lovely. You've got the Paris stuff, then Florence, then back. I love the just sheer ferocity of the storyline, just banging along like a sort of train. Yeah. And you still don't know where the destination is yet. You still don't know how is all this going to tie in. The Count now decides that he wants this machine to help him. And then the Doctor and then Romana realise, but actually, this thing could actually rip Paris to shreds. It could blow up the entire city.
Mm. Yes.
So finally, you've got a bit of peril that affects someone not being
direct,
a doctor.
Yeah,
you know? There's direct peril to other people, which if you think is a great story idea, by episode 4, it turns on its head so spectacularly that you're like, oh my God, it's not just Paris. It's just so well done. Mm. So the Count decides to prove just how nefarious he is by turning poor old Professor... What's your dummy all day?
Yeah.
Into a really old man and then a skeleton with a wig on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's really horrible. The
it
professor's
is, like, to
like
he's,
got, he's in death throes. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's just an innocent man that got caught up by some shady people, isn't
he? At least he went on to do those Scotch tape adverts.
Yeah.
With the lifetime guarantee.
Yes. Yes. Mm. Which is another Jagaroff song.
Yes. So so that's the end of part three. The look of horror as the poor man gets sort of like aged up, and it's really nasty.
Hmm.
Part four begins. Duggan now for the first time finds out that actually what's going on is beyond his purview. It's aliens, it's galaxy, it's stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like, okay.
Yeah.
I'm fine with that. I'll probably just punch my way through anything that happens. He's absolutely fine with it. And then you get the Count reveals that he's actually got a spaceship. So now you're like, so the alien we saw right at the beginning was Count Scarlione. And it was the explosion itself that went wrong that caused him to be scattered throughout all the timelines. So you're going, okay, it's a bit odd science-y, but I'm happy to accept that as a
plot kind point. Of works in a sort of instinctual way, doesn't it? All that
And it malfunctioned on takeoff. And there's actually 12, I keep saying 7, but it's not, there's 12 versions of himself.
You see glimpses of them, don't
time.
You? You see like an Egyptian Julian Glover and like a Roman Julian Glover. Mm.
Yes. And the reason why he's been trying to get all this money is so that he can get all the parts needed to create this nefarious piece of equipment that is actually only there for one purpose, and that's to save his race, to prevent
because he's
the last of his kind, the last of the Jagaroth. Mm. All he wants to do is create this machine so he can go back to the very moment where it happened and prevent it from happening. And I'm like, oh, well, yeah, I can sort of see your modus operandi there.
Mm.
I know that to do that, you're going to destroy all of Paris, but to Duggan, I'm sorry, but to Scarlione, who gives a shit? I'm an evil man, but I want to save my own kind. And part of me's like, yeah, that, do you know what? Good on you.
Mm. Well, it's sort of good that he, because his cat, you know, the persona he's taken on in Paris is of this like incredibly rich man who sort of doesn't care about anyone beneath him anyway. And so the idea that, you know, above that is an alien who doesn't care if literally all life on Earth is wiped out as a result and he doesn't really care. It's also quite thematically linked, isn't it? It's very nice in that respect.
Yeah.
Mm. Mm.
So Romana is now forced to build a time field stabilizer. And this is a bit that you mentioned, John. This is the next scene. It's back at the, it's now the Doctor goes upstairs to speak to the Countess.
Yes, beg your pardon. Yep.
And then they talk about Shakespeare. The Countess shows Doctor the original Hamlet manuscript, and the Doctor recognises his own handwriting in there, which is just really lovely.
Great.
Yeah.
And then the Doctor does that amazing thing where she goes, where he goes, you do realise your husband is not quite... how was your honeymoon?
Well, he had basically a courgette and a pair of Brussels sprouts.
So the Doctor sort of goes, you really do not know who you've jumped into bed with. And it's just, and you're like, oh, God, she doesn't know, the poor woman, the poor thing.
So scary, yeah.
It's brilliant. And then what happens there?
Then they all come up. He's
something
taken
about
down
ancient
to the...
Egyptian papyrus for some reason. Oh, yeah, yeah, the Doctor. No, she finds it, doesn't she? She's got this thing and she looks at it and she unfurls this ancient Egyptian papyrus and you see this godlike picture that the Egyptians have adored of the Jaggeroth.
Like, doubt is in her mind, isn't it? He's like, he sets her on a journey to sort of work out that.
That's
actually,
right. Yeah. You don't know who your husband is. And she goes, you're absolutely right. There's a picture of an alien in Egyptian society.
Which
he's probably him. Yeah. But I'd imagine that's probably one of his 12 selves, isn't it? Scattered throughout.
Yes.
Yeah, it was
just
when they took the drawing, one of the blokes had his eyes closed.
So now the Doctor, for the first time, is not all fun and games anymore. He warns. He warns Scaliani, warns him to never mess with time. And the Count goes, well, what are you going to do? And the Doctor goes, whatever I need to stop you. And you really go, oh, fuck, yeah. Doctor means business now. All the gags have stopped, which is brilliant. And the Countess now suddenly appears, and she's got a gun pointing at her husband.
Yeah.
For the first time since she's been with him. I don't know how long they've been together. Who exactly are you?
That's why.
Why
I'm
do I wake up in the morning and the sheets are all green?
This is not Mel Torme.
And she does that amazing thing where she doesn't say who are you. She goes, what are you?
Yeah.
Oh, and then the Count suddenly goes, oh, well, I can finally speak in my normal voice. Because he goes, I am Scaroth, last of the Jaggeroth.
That's
sorry, I
trod
on some
this,
Lego.
Sorry,
Tom.
But that's like, in my own personal view, that's why there's like a perception filter thing going on where she like, you know, I think that she probably has been like under some kind of hypnosis, you know, some kind of mild hypnosis or something. Yeah. That's how I'm choosing to perceive it anyway.
And then he reverts back to his normal voice and goes, well, let me show you, dear. Like he's relishing it. Like, look what I've been doing to you. You didn't know it. And he suddenly rips off his head and she's like, holy fuck, I've been fucking a Brussels sprout for 4 years. He's like, Jesus Christ. And Scaroth then decides, I don't need you anymore either. And he kills her via the bracelet that she's wearing. It goes all electrocutioning. Yeah. And that's horrible. Mm. Just dispensing with people like flies.
Yeah.
Oh. The Doctor is now downstairs. And he actually gives Romana a bit of a bollocking. Like, stop building the thing that's going to destroy Paris. She's literally going, no, I really enjoy a bit of like science homework. He's like, no, stop doing it now. Stop it. She's like, oh, it's going to be a really good death machine, Doctor. Like, well, you really shouldn't do that. Mm. Meanwhile, Duggan appears by smashing down the door.
Yay!
It's so funny. And the Doctor reveals to Scaroth or to someone, I can't remember who, that it doesn't matter. You'll never get any more money for funding anyway because I put these are fakes on the back of all the paintings, which is absolutely brilliant. Scaroth has now had enough. He's got them all at gunpoint. He's got them all at gunpoint. Mm-hmm. And then for some reason, he travels back in time, doesn't he?
Yes. Is he going back to his ship now?
Yeah, I presume then Romana has done the job that was required.
Yes. Yeah.
Which, if that's true, then the 7 Mona Lisa paintings haven't been sold yet, or have they? I don't know. Is that just extra pocket money he wanted? I don't really know.
Well,
anyway,
with her ability, to, you know, being a time lady.
Yes, I suppose.
You know, he sort of can bypass.
That's
the stuff
probably
that
what it is. She circumnavigated all the stuff. Yeah, she probably picked up a pumpkin and shoved a bit of Lego into it and some plasticine and made a. You know, reverse the polarity of the neutron flow. You're
exactly
absolutely right.
Yeah, exactly.
So Scaroth decides, this is it now. I can do the thing that I've been cursed, stuck on this horrible bloody planet for all these years. I can finally go back and prevent myself from blowing up and save my species. So now the Doctor says, everyone into the fucking TARDIS.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely brilliant because I am going, oh, Duggan in the TARDIS, Duggan in the TARDIS.
Fun.
But you don't get to see much of it, unfortunately, which is a real shame.
You get to see them all running through Paris. You get lots of nice montage.
Yeah, beautiful. And you get them to run into the TARDIS. And of course, they have to get into the TARDIS, which happens to be in the Louvre. And you get possibly what is considered, I'd imagine, to be the most classic, funniest Doctor Who moment ever,
yeah,
which is the John Cleese, Eleanor Bron. And it is absolutely brilliant.
Exquisite.
It's so funny.
Absolutely exquisite. It's restrained, isn't it? It's like...
It's not double take. They see the TARDIS disappear and they're still talking about it as if it was there.
And he doesn't say, I mentioned the Jaggeroth once, but I think we got away with it.
It's so rare for just like, it's a good bit of stunt casting and it's really enjoyable, but they just, and you sort of go, did that just happen? And then it's gone and it's just a lovely, and it's fun, it's properly funny. Oh, it's so good.
It's
so
brilliant because it's a throwaway gag, but with a linger. It's so beautifully done.
Yeah.
It's a throwaway joke, but then exquisite, just looking at nothing. We don't want to look like idiots because we're poncy art snobs. It's just so beautiful, so beautifully realised and well done. So now, not only has the Doctor been in Paris in 1979, Florence in 1505, we are now 4 million years BC on planet Earth. And not only will Scaroff's ship taking off destroy Paris in 1979, it will do far more damage than that because, it won't do any damage at all. It'll do the best thing in the world because Scaroff has to die, the Doctor works out.
He must
die. Not because he needs to create and save his race, because it's the very act of the ship's thrusters malfunctioning that ignites the primordial soup 4 million years ago that creates very, very idea of mankind. And that is fucking genius.
You want to stand up and applaud when he says that, don't you?
You really do.
What an idea.
You really do. You're like, wow, all that jeopardy and all that, and it has to happen, because if it doesn't happen, there would be no mankind. And then, just to counterbalance all that joy, there is Scaroff about to get into his ship, and Duggan lamps him.
Yeah. Yay! I love that bit
And it's
as well
just when, amazing.
When he's looking at the primordial soup, and he's like, and it's this primordial soup, and then he just goes, you Duggan.
This is who
you are to me.
You Duggan. Not only have you just got this major fucking plot, like mic drop, bang, look at that. If the Jaggeroth has to die, as there would be no mankind. And then suddenly Duggan just goes, oh, okay, this is easy. Punch.
Also, we just can't hang around because Adric will be here in a minute to crash a spaceship.
And the Doctor turns to Duggan, looks him square in the eye and goes, that might be the most important punch in history. Which is just absolutely brilliant. Mm-hmm. So Scaroff now returns back, doesn't he, to 1979. Because he cannot because obviously I think the act of, is it the original Scaroff that's gone back to the past?
He's
going to stop him. Yeah,
well, does he vanish? Does he vanish because it's one of those
Is it a causal time effect because he didn't get into a ship that he then reverts back to? I'm not entirely sure.
A paradox.
Yes. Yeah.
So the spaceship takes off as normal as it would have done in the original timeline and does what it was supposed to do, which is explode.
Yes.
And it's a really good explosion model work. All that model work looks absolutely
really
lovely. You've had all this beautiful, lush outside Paris celebration. You've had the beautiful sets of Florence and the chateau and a really good stage work, model work. It's just all absolutely stunning. Mm-hmm. So then the TARDIS leaves, comes right back to Paris 1979, where Scaroff has reappeared. And I don't really know what Scaroff's options are now. I don't know whether just in anger he's going to destroy Paris anyway or whether he's going to try again. But he's essentially been thwarted. He's also very, very annoyed and angry because he's still the last of the Jaggeroth, I presume. So, and then in a proper nice bit of sort of who's gonna end this, it's the henchman Herman that decides, do you know what, I've had enough of this shit. I've had enough of this. And just throws a vase at him. Whilst he's in the middle of the field energy of the machine that's taken him back. And very act blows up the machine, thus destroying Count Scarliani, Scaroff, the last of the Jaggeroth, and all his kind. He is destroyed, which is great. And then it's got a beautiful parting shot with the Doctor, Romana, and Duggan. And I'm so want the Doctor to go, why don't you come with us? Please invite Duggan with you.
He's earned the right.
He's so out the right, and he would just been so. Even if it was for two or three stories, Duggan would have been brilliant, because Duggan would have been someone who three or four stories down the line would have said, "Doctor, this is where you leave me. I love this society." You know, he would have found a really lovely warlike race or a battle to stay involved in. He would have been perfect, but no, he
King
doesn't
Yacanos.
Go with them.
He would have met King
Yacanos, exactly, stuff like that. Duggan would have been amazing.
Also, how the fuck have we got K-9 and Company and Sarah Jane's Adventures when we haven't got Duggan PD?
Duggan Dick.
Yeah, Dick Duggan just going around doing time-based private detective work. It would have been amazing.
Oh, it would have been amazing. Yeah.
Fist of Duggan. So the Doctor says goodbye to Duggan. They're on the top of the Eiffel Tower, and you think, that's lovely. And then there's a lovely shot of the Doctor Romana right at the very bottom, just waving up at him.
Mm. Is that a callback to the first episode? You know where they have that thing where they're like, should we fly? And you sort of think, are they just playing around? Are they sort of having
I don't know.
Fun
Are they just having fun at his expense?
And then at the end it sort of implies they have flown down, but like I quite like that. It's quite sort of abstract. It's sort of a bit impressionistic, that ending. And then they just run off into
and they
Paris.
Run off. They just run off into Gay Paris, and it ends with that sting. And afterwards, I immediately watched the whole thing again, but this time I didn't have to take notes. You know? It's the first time since I've done Wheezing Groaning that I've finished it and then gone, and now I'm watching it right away again. But this time I don't want to be scribbling all the way through it. I just want to sit and enjoy this. Because, my friends, that was a fucking treat.
Yeah, it really is, isn't it?
A treat. Now, we have to give it 100 Duggan punches, don't we? I mean, it has to be 100 thumps.
Hmm. I mean, like, you know, in doing these, and it's been really interesting, but you face a thing saying, if this doesn't get 100, this is perfect Doctor Who. So, like, if this isn't the high watermark for it, then what is really? What are you looking for in your Who? It's witty, it's exciting. So
it's just
certainly, I'll
it?
Preempt it and go, I'll give it 100 Duggan punches.
Oh, my word. Well, I'll go first. Thank you very much, Mr. Neenan. Unbelievable. I'm going to say exactly what you said. I mean, it's just there's nothing wrong with it at all. There's no dud bits, there's no boring bits. It's got three plots interweaving into one. It's got an alien reveal that is genuinely terrifying. It's got so much cracking good fun in the dialogue. The plot surprises you three times. It's amazing. The idea of seeing seven Mona Lisas, then you find out why, then you find out they're fakes, then you find out that the Jaggeroth has to be destroyed to create mankind. It's just got everything and more. Everyone is brilliant in it. Everyone in that is brilliant. Herman's brilliant. The crazy professor's brilliant. The Countess is brilliant. Glover's brilliant. Romana's—they're just all brilliant. Tom, even though you know we often say that Tom towards the end of his tenure got a bit lazy and fed up with it all. Maybe the fact that he was in Paris and he managed to just get hammered in a really pretty bistro when he wasn't filming—he's just on top form. He's gleeful throughout the whole thing. It's all fun and games until like 80% of the story's done, where he suddenly gets serious, and that's a lovely U-turn for him. Romana's brilliant in it. I just can't fault it. I can't give it 100, unfortunately, because I can't give anything ever 100. Nothing's 100% perfect. So I'm going to give it 99 Duggan thumps.
99. Okay. Mr. John Rain, what are you going to plump for?
I'm going to give it 100 Duggan punches.
Oh!
Just because it had such energy and pace, and it didn't stop, and it was funny, and the bit where they're first interrogated by the Count is possibly my favourite scene ever in Doctor Who.
Yep.
With just everything everyone says is electric. And Tom, you know, when he says, why did you steal the bracelet? He says, because it was pretty.
Yeah.
And he's got that glint in his eye where you know everything he says is bullshit.
Yeah.
Like Paul said, it was just when I finished it, I wanted to watch it again. I mean, I didn't.
Yes.
I wanted to. but it's definitely my favourite ever story of Doctor Who. So I'm giving it 100 out of 100.
100 out of 100. You know what? I quite like your reasoning, Paul, which is like there's, you know, if you wanted to pick holes in stuff, there's a polystyrene brick, which could have been redone. That looks, you know, that sort of it slightly takes you out the minute at the moment. So, you know, there are elements, and I know what you mean. It's basically
there could have been maybe just a few less montagey running around Paris shots, but
yes,
who cares? I mean, who cares?
Yeah, I'm going to give it 99 as well, I think, because, yeah, like you say, you want to keep them on their toes. There's perfection is something all artists strive for. But,
absolutely.
This is going to be no surprise.
It's a really easy score.
298 Duggan punches, which I think is how many are in that story.
Yeah. That's got to be, obviously, the highest ever. That's now beaten Ark in Space, isn't it?
I think our highest
was Pyramids of Mars.
Pyramids of Mars. I forgot Pyramids of Mars. So it's now our number one. That's going to be a really hard one to beat.
Yes.
And it often crops up, doesn't it, in the top 7 to 10 stories of Doctor Who whenever they do
it
polls.
Does, yeah.
It always pops in there. Sometimes it's lower down, sometimes it's higher up. Caves of Androzani seems to be the one that most people think is the best of the best. But
we skew probably more for comedy and stuff. We like it when Doctor Who's funny and witty. Mm. I'm not sure if we watch Genesis of the Daleks, we might find that a bit too heavy. You know, it's a very heavy story.
Yes,
so
yes.
This might be more to our tastes, and obviously if you're listening to this and you like Doctor Who and it's more dark and gritty and a bit grimy, then it might not be, you might find it a bit flip or a bit smug. But
what I like about what I love about City of Death, actually, the one thing I don't like about City of Death is the title City of Death. It should have been called The Jaggeroth.
Mm. Yeah,
that's an amazing title for something.
Yeah.
The Jaggeroth.
Or Last of the Jaggeroth.
Last
yes,
Jaggeroth.
Something like that. It would have been. But anyway, that's just a petty little quibble. what you don't often get in Who is the Doctor turning up. What you always get in Who is the Doctor turns up within 5 minutes. They know that the most evil thing is about to happen, and they need to snoop around and stop it. With this, it's much more gentle, pastoral fun. And then suddenly the Doctor goes, shit, no, this is serious. And then to turn it on its head and go, well, it has to happen because else we're not here. It's just so clever and fun. It's got beautiful plot devices. Anyway, I could wax lyrical about it forever. Oh. It's just brilliant. It's just absolutely brilliant.
What did our listeners think of it?
Wow. Correspondence. There's a few on this one. Ben Thomas says, City of Death was famously written over a weekend by Douglas Adams, fueled by coffee and whiskey, when the original writer had to drop out at short notice. With Parisian location filming, surreal dialogue, and John Cleese randomly turning up, it feels like a delicious fever dream.
It really does. It's, and I think, clearly Adams was at the height of his power as well. Mm. So I agree.
Greg Newport says, City of Death, aka Nice Jaggeroths.
Fair enough.
City of Death, this is from Tamara Bumdia. City of Death are the classics. Some brilliant physical acting from Tom and scarf action. Two Time Lords hanging about in Paris, falling in love, delightful.
Yeah, absolutely.
Really is.
Becky says, City of Death, I have a theory that the reason K-9 isn't in it is because he saw the staircase of the Eiffel Tower and locked himself in the TARDIS lav.
Well, he is referred to, isn't he?
Crinoid podcaster, City of Death. I were to assume that Scarlione Scaroth wore a full genital prosthetic when he and the Countess got jiggy with it, or did they always do it with the lights off and she just thought he enjoyed poking shredded leeks up her foo-foo?
Oh god, Jesus.
Ian Berryman says, Lala Ward dressed as a schoolgirl, charming or deeply problematic? Discuss. Also, Duggan is one of the great lost companions. Yes. Plus, did Scarlione turn the lights off when having sex with the Countess?
Oh, God.
Or have a human skin cock disguise? Or are Jaggeroth only green from the neck up?
I only presume that when they made love, she always presumed he had a ribbed condom on.
George, it's a perception filter. That's what we've decided. It's a perception filter he was using.
George Stevens says, the music in City of Death just fits the whole feel and mood.
Doesn't it?
Of a slightly, there's some science fiction 2 episode. Michael Fier says, City of Death, a lot of fucking walking. Which seems like a complaint, but
yeah.
Overall, though, I think it's phenomenal.
It is.
Yes. Mm.
So, thank you very much, gentlemen, for going with me to the City of Death. We've had a lot of fun. Do follow us on Wheezing Pod and keep on commenting any pictures that you want to send us. We love it all.
Mm.
And I'm going to finish this as professionally as I can. Let's hope that the next city we go to is the city of health and wealth and prosperity.
Yay. Mm. So couldn't agree more.
It's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Yvette, I'm Keza McDonald.
And I'm Ellie Gibson.
And this is our new show, Extra Life.
It's basically us talking to funny people about video games.
When I was a kid, it was Grand Theft Auto.
The Sinclair ZX Spectrum.
We talk about the games people remember from when they were kids and what they're playing now.
Guitar Hero.
The Last of Us 2.
Combat on the Atari 2600.
No, I love Pokemon.
Anyway, find us anywhere you get your podcasts.
Extra Life.
GreatBigOwl.com.